Back to what we were discussing, Marvin said after you remove the political aspect of it from it, he was okay. And I would surmise the Torah, what you said, the Torah system from the worlds that others would take. God set natural laws into operation.
Correct.
Then he gave the principles from Torah, and mankind is to use his mind, the teaching of Torah, to bring about the necessary resolve. And when they go against Torah principles because of the natural laws God established, he allows those things to transpire.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So you can proceed in whichever direction you want to go now.
Okay. I would like to, you know, I'd like to clarify a little further because I just don't want there to be any misunderstanding yet. But first, I'd just like to mention that we mentioned last week that the Maimonides says that the whole concept of eating the Paschal lamb and eating it in haste was because people, there was a danger of the people if they would tarry and eating the Paschal lamb, that then the main group would leave and there would be stragglers behind and they would be open to the they'll be open to the danger of the attack from the enemies, because whenever you have a group of people that are detached from the main group, they are in a military situation. They're in danger. So the point I wanted to emphasize here is, again, you see that the Torah demanded of the people a totally rational outlook, because a mystical person would say, well, look, God's saving us tonight. We don't have to worry. Look what happened. The firstborns died, and now we're going out. We can just go out any way we want. God's going to protect us. That is not true. That's what Maimonides is emphasizing, that whatever God does in the way of protection is limited to what he does. The rest, that which he does not do, you have to use your own mind, your own intelligence, and responsible for. Okay? Now, I do not mean to say that God never controls the laws of nature. That is not true. That again is not true. The Torah says that if the people of Israel live according to the Torah, then the rains will come in their time, in their seasons, and catastrophes will not befall them. So God does control the laws of nature, and he does intervene under the conditions which he states in the Torah, but not in any other way, okay? That's the point I'm making. And God does save individuals as well, as we know from the Torah itself, under certain conditions. But to say that you can save every innocent person, that is not what God's world is all about. So again, I am not trying to say, I don't want anyone to walk away and think that I said that the Torah preaches the idea that God never intervenes with the laws of nature. That's not true. That's not true either. But the Torah teaches that under certain conditions, the existence of an individual or of a person becomes something which is necessary, and since that's the case, the laws of nations are suspended with regard to that individual or with regard to that people, under the conditions that the Torah describes. But beyond that, it's not so. And again, over here, I think in Passover is an excellent example where God did intervene, and he did suspend the laws of nature, and the children of Israel were able to leave Egypt, but again they were responsible to make sure that they left in the most safe way possible. They could not say, "Well, we could just straggle along. Look, God's protecting us anyway. Look at all these miracles. So he's going to save every individual." Not true. What he says he will do, he will do. But he will not do anything beyond that. He expects you to use your mind, your intelligence, your reason, and if you do not do that, then you're going to be subject to danger, and you'll be destroyed. There again, you have the concept of the swears that are mentioned in the Song of Songs, and it says in the Song of Songs, it says that that you should make sure not to. That you should make sure that you should not you should not invoke until it has become desirous. And the rabbis explain what that means. Now, if you study the Talmud, you'll find basically is that the Jews in the diaspora cannot just do things without sense because God is going to save them. This is not. No, the Talmud says it's the opposite. If you act that way, then what's going to happen is that your flesh is going to be given to the animals of the field, the animals of the forest, which means to say that God is not going to save you. So there is a way to act intelligently and courageously, but not foolishly. And the only time that the children of Israel can act with total confidence, without concern about the other nations, is only under a very special condition where all the people of Israel keep the law. And that's a special condition. But anything less than that, when that condition is one of the conditions not there, if they try to invoke, so to speak, as a Song of Songs, to invoke the love, they will not be successful, and they're going to be destroyed. So the point making is that God has determined for us exactly, precisely how to act and how to live, and we have to follow His guidelines. We cannot just do things that we feel should be a certain way. We can't expose ourselves to dangers and expect God to protect us. Not what He said He's going to do. We have to be very careful and see what the Torah teaches insofar as what God does and insofar as what our responsibility for ourselves and our friends and our people is. That's the basic concept in the Torah. There was an argument, by the way, between it was Yoshiyahu and Isaiah, and that was the argument. That's why he got killed, because he maintained that he can act in a way that that they will be protected, because it says that the Torah says that when in the good times that the sword will not go through your land. So therefore he went to battle, and he thought he was going to win because he thought that God was going to be with him, because he removed all the idols. But it didn't work, because Isaiah told him, he said that it's not going to work because the people overtly have removed the idols, but they still privately worship idols. And therefore, it wasn't successful, and he got killed. And even though he was a great person, he was not protected by God. So the person has to be very careful in the way they act. The basic premise of the whole Torah is that a person must use reason. And that's the concept of eating the Paschal lamb in haste. Now, what I wanted to get into tonight a little bit, maybe there's still some time left, I wanted to get into the concept that I mentioned before, that there is no such thing as rituals in Torah. There is only halacha. Now, the people, the children of Israel, on the night of Passover, they had a lot of things to do. And, of course, it could not be done as a simple ritual. It had to be done as halacha. That being the case, Moses had to instruct the people and really teach them the fundamentals of the halacha. So the funds of the halacha were really taught in the land of Egypt on starting with the beginning of the month, with the beginning of the month of Nisan, and it continued for 2 weeks until the actual slaughtering of the Paschal lamb. Now, it's very interesting, but all those things that were done in those commandments are really laden with halachic concepts of the most basic type. And, of course, it stands to reason, because any performance that had to be done by the children of Israel had to be done as halacha. And halacha is very demanding in terms of its logical structure and its concepts. So it stands to reason that Moses had to introduce the people at that time into the concept of halacha. And I mentioned last week that the rabbis derive it from one word, because it says withdraw and take a lamb. Now, what does it mean withdraw? So the word withdraw has no place there. So the rabbi said it means withdraw from idolatry and then take a lamb of mitzvah, which means that the lamb of mitzvah is a different kind of performance. This is not a ceremony. This is not a ritual. This is God's halacha, and therefore Moses had to teach the people the basic concept of halacha before they could perform the commandment. And it is rather amazing, but of course understandable, that some of the most basic principles of halacha are found in those commandments, those few commandments that are that were given to the people of Israel in Egypt. Okay? Now, you know, there were two sets of commandments that were given. There were certain commandments that were given at that time, and they were not for generations. And then there are commandments there that are for generations. And I mentioned also before that the commandments that one would think would be the most suitable for reliving the Exodus are precisely the ones that were never given for generations, only given for that time. Namely, keeping your feet or your shoes on your feet and holding your staff in your hand and your waist girded and putting the blood on the doorpost and all those things that would actually would be more sensually arousing in terms of bringing back the concept of leaving Egypt. Those were omitted, basically. And eating it in haste. There's no law of eating the Paschal lamb in haste. Only that first generation. So I mentioned that the Torah does not favor the sensual and the imaginative. And that's why the Torah omitted those for generations and only left the ones that serve as vehicles of understanding and knowledge. Just from that alone, one can see the whole approach of Torah, just from that fact alone, that the approach of Torah is not to relive Egypt in a sensual way, but the concepts, the ideas, in an intellectual way. And that's why those commandments which would lend themselves most to sensual representation were really omitted for generations. But the getting back to my point before, I mentioned before, which is that some of the most basic concepts were taught to the children of Israel with regard to the Paschal Lamb. And I think it might be an idea to we can't do all of them, obviously, and we can't do them in depth either, but just to at least have an idea of what those basic concepts are. I think it's important for Ben Noach, not because Ben Noach is supposed to be studying the laws of the Paschal Lamb. That's one area that really is not in the within the scope of his study, because it's something which he doesn't partake of. But we'll see. Actually, there is a reason to say why he has to have some knowledge of it as well. But I'm just doing this in order to give you in order to demonstrate to you the idea of halacha, which Ben Noach certainly must have. Okay. Now, you know very well that there is a concept of a positive commandment and a negative commandment. And that concept was certainly given to the children of Israel on regarding the eve of Passover. And to take an example, a positive concept, I'm going to take the one that we have for generations. By the way, we don't know any of the details with regard to the halachic structure. We do not know the halachic structure with regard to the commandments that were only given for that first generation while they were in Egypt. The only ones that survived are the commandments that are permanent, because the oral law explained those. But the ones that were done in Egypt on that night and was a one-time commandment, we do not know exactly the halachic structure of those laws. But we are fortunate that we do know the halachic structure of those laws which are for generations. We will stick to those. Now, positive and negative commandments is probably the most basic division of the mitzvot, the commandments of the Torah. And that, of course, you had. You had the positive commandment, for instance, of sacrificing the lamb, and then you had the negative commandment of not eating the lamb when it was raw, partially broiled, partially cooked, or eating it when it was cooked. That was also a prohibition. That's in Exodus 12:9. Okay, so there you have two negative commandments. Okay, not eating it partially roasted, which means not completely, not where it's not edible, and also not eating it cooked in water. That was also a prohibition. Okay, so you have a positive and the positive commandment of slaughtering the Paschal lamb, of eating the Paschal lamb, those two. Then you have negative commandments as well. But really, Torah is much more to the basics of Torah than just positive and negative commandments. I will give you an example. That concept alone needs some clarification. What do we mean by positive and negative? Okay. Let's say for instance when the Torah says in Leviticus, it says, these are the animals you shall eat. And then it tells you what you shall not eat. So the ones you shall not eat is negative. Now, but then it says, these are the ones that you shall eat, okay? So when it says that, so that is called, now the question is, when it says you shall eat them, which means the kosher animals, it means you shall eat only the kosher animals, the non-kosher. Now, is that a positive or a negative commandment, okay? Just think about it. Not eating the non-kosher, that certainly is negative. No question about that, okay? But now eating the kosher, where it says, these are the animals which you shall eat. These animals shall you eat. So is that positive or is that negative? Okay? Well, the answer is that this is a special category. It's called a negative which comes out of a positive. Okay? Which means to say as follows. That you shall eat only these animals which are kosher. So actually, it is excluding the other animals. But the statement is positive, but the intent is really negative. In other words, I could tell you not to do something in two ways. I could tell you don't drink soda, or I could tell you drink water. Okay. In both instances, I'm telling you something negative. But in one case, I'm using a positive framework. In the other case, I'm using a negative framework. Okay? So that, by the way, is another kind of commandment, which you have over here as well. Okay? You have it in the case of... Let's just leave it at this point. I'll get back to that. But okay. I just want you to know the three categories. You have the positive, you have the negative. Okay. Now, what's the difference between a true positive commandment, for instance, putting on phylacteries, which is a true positive commandment, or the commandment of eating kosher animals? Why do I say in one instance it's a true positive commandment, and the other say, well, it's not really, it's really a negative, but it's expressed in the positive? Okay? How do I determine whether it is a true positive commandment or whether it's merely something negative but it's expressed in a positive way? Okay? I have to have some way of determining this. So I don't know what the category is, because there are basically three categories. You have the negative, which is expressed negatively. You have the positive, which is expressed positively. And then you have a negative which is expressed in a positive way, like the case where I said drink only water, which would mean the exclusion of soda. Okay, same thing with the Torah says, eat only these animals. Okay, Now, that's a negative. It means don't eat the other animals. It's a negative, but expressed in a positive way. Now, how do I differentiate between those two cases? A simple question, okay? These are some of the basics of halacha, okay? Because halacha is a system which has fundamental principles, and now we're dealing with some of these fundamentals. The answer is as follows. The answer is, there is a very simple way to tell whether you're dealing with a true positive or whether you're dealing with a negative, but it's just being expressed in the positive, okay? The way that you can tell is, if there is some kind of fulfillment, so then it's a true positive, okay? If there is no fulfillment, then it's not a true positive, it's a negative. All right, now let's take each one of these cases. And the Torah says, put on phylacteries, is there a fulfillment? The answer is obviously yes. That's the fulfillment, to put on the phylacteries. But what about the case where the Torah says, eat the kosher animals? These are the ones you shall eat. Is there a positive fulfillment? Okay. Well, the answer is very simple. If I eat a kosher animal, I'm fulfilling a mitzvah, okay, I'm fulfilling God's commandment, then it would be positive, which would mean that I should eat meat. I should eat animals. I should eat kosher animals. So then every day or whenever the time period might be, I must sit down and eat a kosher animal. Now that's where the oral law comes in and explains the written law, because you could interpret the written law that way. If a person would just read it literally, it says, these animals you shall eat. So a person could say, okay, so every day I have to eat some animal, you see. But the oral law explains to us that that's not the case, that God is not instructing people to eat meat. They don't have to eat meat. If you want to eat, vegetables, that's also fine. Okay. So therefore, there is nothing positive in that commandment. There is no fulfillment. In other words, since there is no fulfillment, so what does that prove? It proves that it is not a true positive commandment, because a true positive always has a fulfillment. It proves that it is a negative. In other words, eat only these. When you eat, eat only these. Never eat the others. So the objective is on the never eat the others. But it's expressing it in the positive. It's saying, limit your food to these. You don't have to eat them, but limit it to them. So therefore, it is a negative commandment being expressed in the positive form. Okay? So now we have the formula, a very simple formula of how you can identify these commandments, whether it's a positive, true positive, whether it's a negative, true negative, or whether it is a negative, but it's being expressed in a positive manner. Okay? The criterion is very simple. If there is a fulfillment, then it's a true positive. If there is no fulfillment, so then it is simply a negative, but it's being expressed in a positive manner. And that, of course, to determine that, one cannot determine from reading the Bible itself, because you just don't know. The literal meaning could be both ways. And that's why one must make recourse to the oral law to determine whether or not it is whether there is a fulfillment here. In other words, you should do this, or whether it's merely saying, limit yourself to this range, to this area. Okay, so that is one of the most basic principles of Torah, the positive, the negative, and the negative, which is expressed in the positive. Okay, we have all three over here. Interesting, we have all three in the night of Passover. I showed you the positive and the negative, and now I'm going to show you where you have the negative, which is expressed in a positive manner, okay? And that is in chapter 12, verse 8, okay? The law is as follows. The law is that, he says, you should eat the meat on that night, okay? Let us say a person, the sacrifice of the Paschal lamb was done in the daytime. All sacrifices are done in the daytime. Sacrifices are never done at night. So the sacrifice of the Paschal lamb was done in the daytime, after midday. Now, it says you should eat the meat on that night, which means that you are not permitted to eat it when? You're not permitted to eat it till nightfall. So if a person should eat it during the daytime, so what happens is the person has violated a negative law, even though it's being expressed in the positive, okay? Because it says you should eat the meat on that night, okay? Which means to say only that night, all right? To the exclusion of the daytime. So therefore, if the person would eat it during the day before nightfall, he would be in violation, in halachic violation, of doing something which he's not supposed to do, which means negative. In other words, when you do something you're not supposed to do, that's negative. Even though it's being expressed, however, in the positive, because it says, eat it during that night. Okay. Now, there is another concept over here, which I wish to introduce, and that is the concept of failing to do a positive, all right, which we have spoken about before, all right? In other words, the idea that when there's a positive commandment, you fail to do it, okay, so then you are in violation of halacha, right? The positive commandment. Now, what I want to show you is that I'm going to show you another case where you have, right over here, you have the one next to the other, you have a negative and a positive, and that's the very next verse in 12:9. Okay, in 12:9 it says like this: do not omit when it is partially cooked, or if it is cooked in water. And then it says, you should eat only that which is broiled on the fire. Okay, and then it says its head with its knee, the legs, in other words, and the innards. Okay. Now, when it says the oral law teaches us that let's say, for instance, now what would happen if a person ate it raw? Okay. So if a person ate it raw, he's not in violation of the first negative, which is don't eat it partially cooked, because it's not partially cooked. It's raw. Okay. And then let's say he's also not in violation of the second law, correct, which is not to eat it cooked, because again, it's not cooked, it's raw. So he bypassed those two violations. But he's going to get caught when it comes to that third part of the statement, where it says, you shall only eat it roasted, which means to say that he's failing. How is he failing? He is failing insofar as fulfilling the positive commandment of eating it roasted. Okay? So therefore, over here, we have, if the person eats it, he is failing to eat it when it is broiled, which is